Hello, welcome to the Track and Food Podcast. You are listening to episode 6 of our installment series. We have been having a great time doing these. Today we brought in another guest. His name is Bruce Nolert. He's a chef here in local Vancouver, and he's come on to talk about his burgeoning little company that he's looking to start, and he has worked with Mick.
At a hotel that shall not be named.
And we've brought him on. We're excited to talk to him. We want to thank all our listeners so far. If this is your first time joining us, thank you. If you're a repeat listener, please continue. We are going to be expanding this series and looking to focus more on a lot more culture items. We're going to be talking to a lot more chefs, a lot more, maybe some people coming up in the beer industry, some people in the wine industry. I know so far we focused a lot on cocktail industry, which has been fantastic so far. And we want to thank all our guests who've come on.
We kind of had to because it was a lightning rod situation.
Exactly.
With the Diageo World Class, so...
And please subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. And thank you. And I hope you enjoy this 6th episode of ours.
Bruce, how's it going, man?
Good, good. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
I'm good. For those of you listening, Bruce and I used to work together. That's where we met. Probably about 4 years ago now.
Yeah, two and a half.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. I lose track of time all the time. And Bruce has been gracious enough to join us. And he's actually started a business as well, which is called Ono, which is... a chef service, everything from pop-ups to menu design. Am I on point there?
Yeah, pretty on point. We're basically, it's Ono, which kind of Hawaiian means delicious. My business partner, TJ Conwy, and myself, we're both, you know, family guys, and we really like the island lifestyle. We like kind of slower, just more community kind of, you know, break bread around the table kind of vibe.
Yeah, so absolutely.
We thought Ono was a really good fit for us. Obviously, we like to make delicious food as well. Yeah, so we're doing consulting for anything really in the hospitality, restaurants, menu engineering, helping them become more profitable with their menus. We can help them with concept branding and all those sorts of things. We're also doing private chef stuff for pop-ups. And
so you've done, I know the pop-up thing is really, I think it's really cool.
I'm really happy that you explained your name, by the way, because that was one of the first things I was going to ask you, because that was when I was looking at your website. I wasn't sure if it was like a family name or if it was like something you guys were referencing. So I think
it's Nolert. Just to clarify.
No, the Ono.
Oh, no.
Oh, the Ono part. Yeah. I'm totally fucked.
Oh, no.
Like, I'm already off track. We just started this thing.
Ono. I really like where you guys are coming from that. To know that means
Loco
delicious.
Ono, right?
Yeah. I initially thought Japanese, right?
Well, I thought it was just an homage to Yoko Ono, you know. So.
This guy's a rock and roll head,
right?
Obviously. Yeah. Totally an homage. A chef company, just an homage to Yoko Ono.
And our sister company's called Lennon, and then we're going to just go.
Yeah, we're kind of no fuss chefs, right? We just... you know, we want to keep things about community food, supporting local farmers, and just being delicious. So we thought Ono was kind of a cool way to represent that.
Nice. Yeah.
So how many pop-ups have you guys done so far?
So we've done 2 so far. We've got a 3rd one in the works. We'll let you know when we figure that out a little bit closer to the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, the first one was back in December last year, and we took over a restaurant that was basically sold, so it was closing. And we went in there. It was called A Night of Too Many Chefs. And we had about 10 chefs in there, and we all came up with different courses. We served it, so there was no expectations for service, right? We are lick your forks, guys.
Where were we? We could have helped out in that.
Yeah. So it was really cool. It was really relaxed. And all the proceeds went to the BC Farmers Market Food Nutrition Coupon Program. And that's a program that we like to support.
What is that?
Yeah, so it's basically, it gives coupons to low-income families. They can go and take to the farmer's market, and they can get really good fresh food as opposed to the canned stuff.
Oh, shit. That's awesome. That's kind of one of the big...
Was that started by the BC Farmers Association?
Yeah, so they have the program. So TJ and I want to give to that. So we did this pop-up, and you know, I think it was about $3,500 we gave them.
Oh, amazing.
And so awesome. In turn, it also supports the local farmers, right? So low-income families are getting good, fresh food. The farmers are getting support as well.
Well, that's something that actually Jamie and I have touched on before, and that's obviously one of the major issues I think that people have with eating healthy and buying healthy food, and especially local healthy food.
For sure.
Is the price point, right?
Yeah.
I just went to the farmer's market yesterday. Man, it's like expensive.
It's much cheaper, right?
I just read a report this past this past week talking about, because I was researching a new article that I'm looking on right now, and I was looking at the Canadian policy, and they're talking about like how rising food costs are going to go up like 1 to 5%, and in BC it's going to go up around like 6%.
Yeah,
for this coming year. And it's like, yeah, if you're a family of four and you're trying to feed your kids, and you know, they were saying like a 4 to 6% jump is like almost $300 to $400 a year for a family.
Yeah,
and that's, and for some families that have like set budgets, I mean, that's a lot of money, right?
So that actually happens every year.
Yeah. The amount of inflation that goes up every year?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's based on weather and, you know, where we're getting a lot of the stuff through the off seasons, right? So if the weather is bad, then the food price goes up. And as far as local stuff, a lot of it we actually export, so drives our costs up, right? Like spot prawns and Dungeness crab and those types of things.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think right now with BC, we got the red tide with the oysters. I mean, that probably is driving the price up for a lot of people who maybe are in that market and can't afford them, or, you know, we're having to import them from somewhere else, and, you know, it changes the local economy and everything. So
what'll be interesting to see too, actually, with produce locally is when or if marijuana becomes legal, how that's going to see, you know, like Village Farms is already talking about switching over to marijuana because their profit margins on tomatoes is like 7%.
Yeah.
They're competing with Mexican labor. But if they switch to marijuana, it's 50% margin, right? So how is that going to affect the volume of local
produce,
right?
Dude, we're coming into the wild, wild west with this marijuana stuff, man.
Yeah. Hey, I bought stocks.
You bought stocks? Stocks in marijuana? You can buy stocks in marijuana?
That's
ridiculous.
No, it's a good thing. Why not?
No, get in, of course. It's smart. But I didn't know there was actually a marijuana stock.
There's tons of stocks. So like I bought some stocks when they were like kind of lower. Our friend Ron Oliver from Miami Taylor's, he bought them quite a lot earlier than I did. And he's, you know, if you're smart, it's kind of like, you know, you could catch a wave and could take off.
Yeah.
You got a really diverse portfolio of Bitcoin, marijuana, blue chips. I don't know what else.
Man, I don't want to work for the man for the rest of my life. I want to find a way to get ahead.
Well, programs like that are needed. So that's amazing. That's the first time I've heard of that, actually.
Yeah. Actually, this shirt that I'm wearing is Farm to Label. This shirt we sell, we've got a couple designs there right now. We also have a website, it's farmtolabel.com. And 25% of the proceeds from this go to that program as well.
Nice. Awesome.
So
go
kind
and
of
buy
a,
that shirt.
Yeah.
If you're listening.
Yeah.
It's a really nice shirt. It's got nice.
This one's the pig one.
Piggy one.
Yeah. We've got the tuna one. And basically for those listening, it's got a kind of a butchery dissection of the animal with all the different dishes. There's a lot of, you know, West Coast, French and Asian dishes made from those cuts of the animal.
Huh.
Yeah.
So I guess just for anybody out there who's curious, and as I am right now, can you kind of give us a little bit of a background on who you are and what got you into becoming a chef and how you've gotten to this point?
Yeah, for sure. So I was basically born and raised out in Ontario, kind of out in the farm country area. So I was always kind of exposed to farms and, you know, helping out on farms for summer work and stuff like that. Family meals were kind of a big thing for us. It was always, you know, a point to be at the table no matter what, for dinner at least, you know, one meal a day. So that's kind of where those beliefs kind of stem from.
Do you have a big family? Or?
Not really, just a family of four.
Whereabouts in Ontario?
Just north of Toronto, just outside of Barrie.
Oh, Barrie. Isn't that where
Wasaga Beach.
My hockey knowledge is just like escaping me right now.
Yeah.
You're a hockey fan?
Barrie Colts.
Barrie Colts, yeah. But I'm trying to think of the famous hockey player from there. Steve Yzerman? No. Somebody.
Oh, I'm not a big hockey guy.
So, I know Brampton is like the big one. That's Gretzky and whoever else is from there. Tons of people. We got Joe Sakic, though.
BC. There you go.
Pretty sick.
He's a BC boy?
Yeah, Joe Sakic, yeah. Born and raised BC.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, I think Coquitlam or something like that.
Okay.
I could be wrong.
Yeah.
I probably am. Yeah. So when did you come out to
the West Coast? In 98, me and a bunch of high school guys, we basically packed into a Dodge Shadow. There was five of us in there. We had all of the necessities to travel across the country in a car packed in there. Two of them were actually hippies from high school that we were just bringing along to help cut the gas costs down.
Sure.
We got out here. The minute we hit the Rockies, I was just in awe and just kind of fell in love with them and just felt so small next to them. And then once I hit the ocean, it's pretty much my first time seeing the ocean on that kind of level. And
I'm not going back home.
So we ended up spending our trip out here. And then I went back home and basically found the highest paying shitty job I could to save up and move out here. So it took about a year to do that. And then I was, you know, everything from making rims for Acura and Honda and a molten metal plant. And,
wow,
you know, it was pretty brutal. Came out here and landed in Whistler for about a year. And then from Whistler, I was just kind of doing odds and end jobs, just trying to get my feet under me. And then I ended up back in the city. And that's where I kind of started taking cooking a little bit serious. I got into restaurants there and just kind of fell in love with it. Almost hated it as well.
I think that's
that more just because you hated cooking or is you just hated the industry?
No, I loved cooking. The industry was great for me too, because coming out here not knowing anybody, it's a really good way to build camaraderie and kind of those friends. So
absolutely, that's
kind of what really hooked me at first. The cooking part, I've always liked to cook, and that was a great part. What I didn't really enjoy was, you know, kind of the financial part of it and just not seeing a real great future of being able to
work 14-hour days.
Yeah, exactly. Like working the long grind.
I've written about this.
Yeah. We know.
I've written about this very extensively.
Yeah, so I hummed and hawed about it and I was still cooking and I went to school for a few other things. I knew I had a high need to be creative in whatever I did. So I went to web design school and I was, you know, playing around with graphic design. Came out of there, just, I enjoyed it, but it just wasn't hitting all the marks like kind of cooking was. And then I also, you know, I was just trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I went to BCIT, started trying some architecture and stuff like that. And turned out I was doing a pre-course to get in there. And one of the courses to get in there was a chemistry course, which has nothing to do with architecture and building. And that's the one that I aced. So I started reflecting on that, like maybe it's not the best choice. And kind of, I had basically an epiphany where, you know, I'm really passionate about creating an art. I really like science and chemistry. Obviously, I was pretty good at it. And I really enjoy the business aspect of running a business. And kind of all those things just hit me as like, well, you know what? That's what cooking is. That's what becoming a chef is. And then you add in, you know, making people happy through food and all this community and learning about different cultures and arts and food. It just kind of hit me like a ton of bricks. And that was it.
Math and science.
Yeah.
So I'm into it.
Where was the first restaurant that you worked for in BC, I guess?
Yeah. I mean, I've worked at a couple of restaurants back out east, you know, like little pizzerias and stuff like that. When I came out here through one of my friends, I landed a job at Earl's. So Earl's
as one does.
I feel like everyone starts at Earl's.
It's a good spot to start. I mean, it's, you know, it teaches you a lot about the systems and stuff like that, but you find out pretty quick if you're creative and you want to kind of really dive into it, it's not a good place to stay too long.
So
then I got out and kind of moved around a bit, taking opportunities to stage at other restaurants and help out, and kind of stayed in that corporate restaurant scene for a little while, and then eventually did some catering and stuff in between, and then hit the hotels. And the hotels were satisfying for a while because there's so many different diversities of people and cooks there, right? There's, you know, cooks from all over the world, so you can really kind of learn. And there's budget to play with as
and
well.
And they pay better,
right?
Yeah. And, you know, there's also a lot of opportunity as well to move around.
Yeah.
And I believe that your menu, when you were at the restaurant, the hotel restaurant that you worked at, I think they got a fifth in the world, fifth best airport restaurant.
Yeah, that's right. So I believe it was 2013. They were ranked 21 or 22 the following year after we implemented the menu, which was basically really focusing on West Coast stuff.
And that was, Jason was there at the time.
Yep.
Okay. Were you the executive chef or were you the?
No, I was a restaurant chef.
So that was under Kieran then.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And
this is at the Fairmont in the airport?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And then so we got the fifth ranking airport restaurant in the world. So, you know, we beat out Sir Sir Lee in Toronto. And so that was pretty cool.
What were you guys doing on that menu that was like kind of like you were most proud of? Or
we were just executing it to a T. No.
Oh, nice.
it was really.
Cheers to that.
It was focused on a lot of Pacific Northwest, which we wanted to do because, you know, the clients that are coming there are, you know, from all over the world. So we wanted to really showcase all the Canadian kind of Pacific Northwest ingredients. So we'd always be doing fresh eats with stuff. We had a garden plot up in North Richmond there, and we'd go there.
Cache Creek? Oh, no, sorry.
Nope, is Terra Nova.
Terra Nova, right. Cache Creek is the cattle farm.
That's right, yeah. So Terra Nova had a share farm there, and basically a lot of it was grown for food bank and stuff. We had a plot where we grow a lot of our own herbs and stuff like that. And there's actually a lot of cool foraging around there. I don't want to give up my spots, but there's some cool foraging there, which you can get a lot of cool stuff. So we go and collect that kind of stuff and bring it back just to showcase that for, you know, a lot of these people first time into BC, right? So we wanted to have, you know, really good salmon and halibut and sable fish and all those types of things, clams and...
No, I think that's, I mean, I think one of the things I've come to love, and I think Mick can probably maybe back me up on this one, but like one of the things that working in the front of house with hospitality is you, over the years, you begin to love the creative part of it, and you become to, and, you know, bartenders have been executing this now for a good 10, 15 years with a lot of the competitions they do, and we've spoken to a few of them, and then also me having gone through a lot of WSET and sommelier training, and mm-hmm. it's like you learn to kind of like sink your teeth in, and you find ways to be creative with like hospitality and people and things like this. And it's like, it goes from being just a job where you come in and you just work and, you know, it's kind of what it is in the beginning, but where it becomes something more than that.
For sure. Yeah.
Right in saying that.
Yeah.
Well, a company like any hospitality hotel chain are really great for that.
Yeah.
That's a major thing that I noticed.
Like fostering creativity and fostering.
Absolutely. Going from a restaurant chain, like Cactus Club or Earl's or whatever, and then to the hotel world is totally night and day in terms of budgetary stuff and like how creative you can actually be.
For sure. I mean, many times, you know, people will come in and you go and chat to them. So you could go and, you know, go to their table and see what they're drinking and what they're into. And you could literally go to the back and you'd have this huge blank canvas and all these awesome ingredients that you could just basically cook them a tasting menu on the spot.
Yeah.
Which, you know, you can't do a lot of
probably
places,
wouldn't happen
right?
very often. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. And what was the name of the garden again?
It's Terra Nova.
Terra Nova, right. Yeah. So we did microgreens, right?
Yeah, we did all sorts of herbs, really like good. Nasturtium, edible flowers,
yeah.
Radishes, lettuces, beans, what else? All sorts of things.
Yeah, I remember using a couple of those in a couple of cocktail creations.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite herb? I'm always curious about this one.
Whoa!
My favorite herb is cilantro.
I think we talked about it earlier. You have stalks in it.
Cilantro. Marijuana, cilantro,
what other? I don't smoke marijuana. I can't. It's not my thing.
No, you know what?
As a chef, you need to know all of them, like very intricately.
Yeah, and I like to grow even in my garden. Like I'll throw herbs that I've never even really worked with before just so I can have, you know, experience with them. I'm a big fan of herbs. I really think they add a lot of flavor to dishes where, you know, give you that unique profile. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely, you know, like thyme is one that can kind of... It
love thyme.
It can go...
Love it.
It can go in a lot of things.
It's great with gin too, actually.
Thyme and pork. Oh.
Thyme and pork, eh?
Yeah. I always like to, when I make pork chops at home, I always put thyme with...
See,
like,
I would think rosemary would be the go-to.
Thyme, and then I put garlic in the pan. And I'll just like sear the shit out of it and then like throw it in the oven just like slowly and bake it a little bit. And the thyme just always adds that like nice aromatic finish.
Yeah. Thyme's great because it's, since it is a little bit more sturdy, right? You can throw it in a hot pan like that.
Yeah.
Throw a knob of butter and baste basically whatever meat you have in your pan, right? Delicious.
Like you wouldn't know anything about like this anymore, would you?
Well, I would say I'm salivating, but I'm now a vegan, so I'm kind of salivating, but not really. But I like rosemary. Cilantro as well.
We should have an entire episode where we bring on two other people who are just like butchers, and we'll just have you sit there.
let's just bring a fucking a pig in here, and let's just do the actual butchering live. Why don't we just go all the way with it?
Hey, man, why don't we try to call the chef who just did that in Toronto just a little while ago? Was it Toronto or Montreal?
Antler, yeah.
That was in Toronto.
Yeah. It was in Toronto, yeah. He basically just butchered the leg in front of him.
You poor pig. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Stop it, you monster.
Yeah, he had a sign outside of his restaurant saying, venison is the new kale.
Yeah, exactly.
Venison's the new kale. That's props to him, man. Like, whatever. I think he totally was in the right.
My thing is this, and just sorry to cut you off here, but just more to like what he was trying to do is like, I get if you choose to become a vegetarian or a vegan, cool. That's totally your choice. But if someone doesn't want to be a vegetarian or vegan, you shouldn't have to be some asshole. That's their choice.
Absolutely.
And I don't see any person who's like, who loves to eat meat running up to vegans, you know, and saying like, oh, you're an idiot and I'm eating meat and like, fuck you. Like,
and if I'm not mistaken, that was like a farm to table type.
Yeah,
like too, right?
That guy doesn't have any pork or chicken or any of the beef on his menu, it's all, he has super direct relationships with all of those game farmers. And he's probably doing more respect to the meat coming in than the vegans are to their vegetables, right?
Exactly.
Like they're probably getting half of their vegetables shipped from, you know, across the border in trucks polluting the earth.
God knows what.
Or they're just wanting Virtuous Pie and eating whatever the hell they eat there.
Love Virtuous Pie. Have you ever been to Virtuous Pie?
I have, yeah.
No, don't go there.
What? It doesn't taste like anything, but you can tell it's actually like healthy.
I just get frustrated when like the vegetarian or vegan culture tries to imitate the really good food that is made with meat and cheese.
Jamie. I was just eating a vegan hot dog before you got here.
Here's the thing. If you want to be a vegan, cool. Eat your vegetables, but just eat them as they are. You have to make them into what? Like, why do you have to turn something into imitation meat?
Tofurkey.
Yeah, like why?
I actually had that
on. You chose not to eat meat. Why do you want to have the sensation of meat?
It's a great point. That's one for the ages. Me personally, before I became a vegan, which it's been about 4 years now, 4.5 years, I loved greasy food, like fucking burgers, pizza. That was like a big part of my diet. So if I can get any sort of semblance to that in my...
But why don't you just accept that you've chosen not to go for that?
What's that?
Why don't you just accept that you've chosen not to be partake in that now?
That's absolutely true. And I go through, it's like a daily back and forth, man, seriously. If you could be inside my head.
Because like my sister would sometimes make like, this was like 10 years ago, she'd come over and she was like, I'm making like spaghetti bolognese. And she would be making like that veggie ground stuff. And then I'd read the ingredients in that shit. I'm like, what is this?
It's like 10 things you can't pronounce first.
Yeah, it's like, it was just like more processed than probably the meat that we would have naturally eaten, which was probably
way less environmentally friendly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And probably a lot better for you.
So. I just cooked those vegan eggs for my brother-in-law who's vegan.
I saw the story the other day. That's fucking weird.
It's weird. I put it in the pan and it all kind of coagulated into this like, plastery kind of texture, and I couldn't scramble it, just slid around the pan.
If you've had diet cheese, the same thing, it just like it stays stationary. Hold on, there's no mold to any fucking.
There's such a thing as called vegan eggs.
Yes, vegan eggs.
What is this?
It's a powder, and basically it's a bunch of extracted food chemicals, right? Like, and there's probably a bit of nutritional yeast in there.
How is that nutritious?
That's a great point, because it's not supposed to be nutritious. So it's like you're cheating. It's like, oh, I'm being bad. I'm eating a vegan wing dripped in the hot sauce. And like, it's not oil. It's not, it's like avocado oil.
I have a feeling that this is what you do. Yeah. You're probably eating one of those things. You're like, ooh, I'm being bad today.
But I'm still good. But I'm being bad right at this moment.
Well, it's funny. You'll probably see out of, you know, Silicon Valley already, like they've got this product called Hermes. And it's actually, I think that's how you pronounce it. It's actually to replicate the blood in a burger or meat.
Oh my God.
But it's all plant-based, right? So they've actually come up with it'll probably be in Canada eventually. It's called the Impossible Burger. And this thing, apparently, I haven't tried it yet,
tastes like an actual burger.
It looks, if I saw it, I would probably think it's
beef. If you go to Meat on Main, their burger like is pretty...
I've had that one.
It doesn't taste like meat, but it doesn't taste like not meat.
But is it a veggie burger, or what is it?
It's a veggie burger, but... It breaks apart like kind of meat does, and it's not, you know, it's not healthy.
Again, why are you trying to imitate something? I don't get it. Why not just
people?
It's all about variety.
Variety. Mm-hmm. That's super weird and kind of cool. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, they've been synthesizing flavors and candy and chips forever, right? Why not do it in vegan food?
They're growing meat in basically in vats now, right? So they're getting
zero cruelty
stem cells and DNA stuff. And
what a world! What an age we live in!
In vats?
Yeah. So
they're
literally,
growing meat
in a petri dish.
You can grow meat in a.
You don't need to kill the animal anymore.
Yeah.
Hey, imagine if you're like just sitting in the freaking farm and you're just like chilling with the cow, eating a meat burger, but it was made from his like DNA cells, and you're like, sweet burger, and he's like, he can actually be like, moo, that was my shit you're eating.
Did you guys ever watch like the show, like, well, I'm hoping you did, but the Star Trek?
Did I ever watch Star Trek?
Well, some people haven't. Did you ever watch Star Trek? TV show, like The Next Generation.
I wasn't an avid fan, but
So I used to like love that show growing up because my brother was
TNG,
obsessed
man.
With it. But like, you know when they go up to the counter and they're like, give me like this food, and materialize?
Yeah.
It sounds like that's where we're going.
I don't see that being too far, like maybe.
Like that's like 30 years?
30 years from
30
now?
Years from now, maybe?
Sure. Well, we're all going to live to, like, people our age are going to live to like 200 for sure. Easy.
Drinking
nano blood cell robots healing your body from inside.
That's right, yeah. Drinking Soylent.
Soylent. My God.
I love how we got on this tangent way from
farm to table. We're way off topic. Okay.
So When did you start your current? So it's Ono. When did you start that?
Yeah, so we started Ono basically the start of 2018.
Oh, so recently.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. I left the active chef role a year and a half prior to that. And I was doing some, you know, I was in the industry still, but more in equipment sales and kitchen design. That was great for a lot of good reasons, for building a network of connections that I wouldn't really be exposed to as a chef, which kind of, that's where my, you know, my gears started turning about, you know, how can I navigate this to still be involved as a chef and maybe have a little bit of a more flexible schedule. And yeah, so just kind of over, you know, some chats with TJ, we kind of came up with the idea. And yeah, so we launched it in the start of 2018.
I'm curious if there's anything similar to what you guys are doing
there
in Vancouver.
There are. We're a little bit different in the fact. So there's a lot of chefs that have kind of hit that point where we did.
Enigma did one, I think, for a bit there. No. Is it Enigma? No. Here, let me look it up while you talk.
Yep.
So
there's some chefs that have kind of hit that point and branched off into consulting.
Consulting, yeah.
Elementa, that's what it was.
Elementa.
There's like a group of like four or five chefs who were doing stuff. But I think they were doing more like pop-up dinners.
Right, yeah.
So strictly pop-up dinners.
Yeah, I think that's kind of, I don't think they were doing a lot more like service-oriented, but I think they were doing a lot of pop-up dinners. But.
Yeah, so, you know, and with Vancouver being so saturated, there's a lot of restaurants popping up. And what I kind of came aware of is a lot of them have no idea what they're doing, right? And a lot of them don't have chefs and a lot of them aren't profitable. And in this industry, you know, you have to collect every dollar and cent you can to make a profit, right? So, you know, profit margins being between 1% and 7% on average, like that's not a lot of money, right? So if you're losing, you know, like $2 a day on something like over a year, that adds up, plus, you know, times it by however many other items you're losing a bit of money on, right?
I don't know what anyone in their right mind would open a restaurant.
It's funny.
Shout outs to you, Ron Oliver, and Mammy Taylor's.
It's funny what you're talking about right now, because that's actually the subject of my newest article that I'm working on right now, which is based on the idea of people's perception versus what restaurants can charge.
Yeah.
So it's like, so let's say a restaurant, and I'm not done this article yet, but I'm just doing a lot of research into it. But like, let's say the idea of a restaurant for, you know, right now they're charging $10 for a hamburger. And, you know, people's perceptions, and they've been going there for a long time and they're like this. But then let's say all of a sudden inflation goes up, rents go up, taxes go up. And then all of a sudden they realize, and then let's say their supplier says, what you're buying from me is now going to cost you an extra $10. So they have to figure out, okay, if right now in the last 3 months, I've been, all these costs have hit me. And for me to maintain the profit margin that I'm getting off this $10 burger, I'm probably gonna have to raise my burger to $12.
Yeah.
Now let's say they do the raise, it's $12. Let's say something else happens and say their taxes, they just got their huge tax bill and they might have to raise it to $14. Well, people's perceptions are always like this. Well, now they're like, okay, if I go up to $14, where in my market, where am I going to be competitive? Am I pricing myself out of the market? And how am I going to? So they're either going to not do that and they're going to try to find ways to cut corners on labor or become more innovative.
Yeah.
And which can hurt their quality, or they're going to change their restaurant model. But then, so what happens is we as consumers, our perception never catches up sometimes with real time changes. And when you were talking earlier about how fluctuations in the economy, like, you know, if there's drought somewhere, if there's stuff that's going on that are external factors.
Yeah.
But those things happen so quickly that people's perceptions sometimes don't catch up. So we've always heard this, you know, in my day, I remember when I could buy chips for a dollar, you know, stuff like this. Well, sometimes people have those things in the back of their mind and they stay for a long, long time. So
for sure.
I had a lady a little while ago, she's like, well, I'm, you know, I can't believe I'm paying $14 for a glass of wine. But in her mind, she's been always paying $10 for a glass of wine.
Yeah.
So, but perception is not catching up with her. And so it's messed up. But what it does
try
is
21.
Well, yeah, $21, but whatever. But I mean, what it does is like it's hard for people sometimes to catch up with what reality is.
Yeah.
And if you're a business owner, you only have a finite amount of time to actually placate what those things are. So how do you bring people's perceptions with reality? And that to me is like one of the biggest issues that faces a lot of restaurant.
There's a huge problem with that I see, and it's the customer level, they haven't been educated to understand what's involved to getting that meal to their table.
Absolutely.
And like you said, they're not up to date on the current cost of all this stuff, right? Like, I kind of had this moment, I went to go get my oil changed for my car and the guy gave me a sheet. On the sheet, it had all this infographic basically of I have to do this with your oil, your car. I have to bring in these people, pay for the lights. And it just really made you understand why he's charging me whatever, $50 for an oil change, right?
Yeah.
Because back in the day, I remember it was $20, right? Yeah. I think that's a big problem now with customers eating out, right? Because plus you can go to like somewhere like Subway and get a $10 sandwich, and then they expect that $10 sandwich, you know, at a high-end restaurant, but they have no idea the level
of Subway's not food.
Well, the quality of ingredients.
Well, and that's the other thing that I'm starting to work on with the article that I'm writing right now is that like you look at the Walmarts and the Subways and the places that have huge buying power. Well, they can go to their suppliers and say, give me this cost at this cost because this is the cost I'm going to charge at. And if you don't give this to me, then I'm going to go with someone else. And then they have such a huge amount of buying power that they can basically tell those companies, you have to give me this at the price I'm telling you to. And I don't care if you guys lose money. A lot of times they lose money because they buy so much. And so if you're a small restaurateur or small producer, how do you compete with that? How do you compete with a company that can undercut you all the time? And so that's why you see a lot more restaurants nowadays becoming more of the countertop meat and bread of those variety where like you go and you just order because if restaurants are realizing for me to maintain competitiveness, I have to sell my sandwich at $10, but then I have to cut corners on everything else.
What's so ridiculous is that people don't realize the consumer really holds all the power.
Oh, absolutely. You dictate when you, and that's the thing is, and that's what I'm trying to get at is like when it comes to misperception is that we dictate what happens. And this is one of the things that
you choose where your money goes.
Absolutely. Sure. And it's like when you guys were talking about my most recent article before this one, I was talking about the restaurants and, you know, like when people, we decide where we go and if people are getting upset about the idea of us having too many chains, well, we're the ones going to them.
Yeah.
That's what we want.
Exactly, man.
So it's like you can't fault other restaurateurs following that model, you know, because they realize that's the only way I'm going to make money.
Well, so. And then on the other end, you know, a lot of times you go to those places for consistency, quickness, and big atmosphere, right? But the little guy doesn't have the money to pay for his higher quality products plus hire enough staff. So he's got like 30 guys online to make sure every plate's out in 6 minutes, right? And it's, you know, people need to understand when they go to those places, it's, you know, supporting the local people and the economy and they're getting that experience of the chef, right? The chef and the owners, what they're trying to, you know, they're bringing you into their home and it's like that hospitality thing, right? But people are so busy these days. It's just more of like, let's go out and eat. It's not kind of losing a little bit of that.
Well, right? And like one of the things I'm always fascinated about, and it's something about the human psychology is that going out, when you say when people go out on Friday nights, people are accustomed to doing the same thing and it's hard to do something new.
Yeah.
So when you don't want to think, you go, where should we go? And you say to your girlfriend, like, where should we go for dinner tonight? And she's like, I don't care. And you say, let's go. Which she really does, told you.
Yeah.
And then you say, let's go try X new restaurant. And they're like, well, is it good? And you're like, no, I've never been there before. And then both of you go, well, let's not risk it. Let's just go safe place.
Yeah.
So, and it's hard to, that's why like when I wrote my last article and I talked about the Van Meg Awards and St. Lawrence winning best new restaurant, which is fucking awesome. I love St. Lawrence. It's a great restaurant and those guys are really doing some cool shit there. But for the majority of people that live in Vancouver, St. Lawrence is going to be off their radar because going there, it's small. It's just outside Gastown. It's still kind of in the ghetto area. It's the food quality that they're doing, they're still kind of niche. And so for a lot of people, that's, and it's expensive. It's not a very cheap place either. So for a lot of people, that's going to be something that's going to, it's, even though they're winning the awards, they may not be winning the war. And that's, and I'm not saying it's a war, but it's just like trying to maintain competitiveness in this market when, especially like a lot of things can really hit you, can be a very difficult thing. And like you said, like it's a tough slog to run a restaurant.
People suck.
And you know, and that transfers to the small farms too, right?
Yeah,
because they're battling against those big industrial competitors, right? So how do they kind of stay in business as well, right? So it's scary to think, right? Because it's just like where everything's kind of getting mowed down, right?
I think we should just, we'll just switch in Canada. We'll switch to the Scandinavian work week. So everyone only works 4 days and only 5 hour shifts. We just cancel TV. And make everyone just like read books.
That's
and like
perfect.
Have more free time.
Sounds great.
And then everyone will be like woke and then like want to like have all these new experiences.
If I was like a policymaker,
you'd be like, what? The fuck is a spiked frappuccino? What the hell is that?
If I was a policymaker about certain things, I would get rid of, first off, private schools because I think they're awful for everything. And the other thing is, you know what they do out there? They don't give kids homework. Like they feel like kids get enough like stimulation with school throughout the week, throughout the day, that they feel like kids need to be kids at nighttime. And they actually say it translates to kids having like they're more alert when they go to school because they've had more time off between class and school. They're not coming home and having to do homework and like think about it.
Yeah.
And so I'm like,
seems like a proper education.
Yeah. Like they want kids to be kids.
To me.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I don't know.
We're solving a lot of problems here today.
Yeah.
I'm impressed with those guys.
Yeah.
I guess with your company being new this year, what is your ultimate goal for like moving forward like this year and like growing the company?
Yeah, so right now we're focusing on getting new clients for consulting. So we're out there networking and we've got a couple contracts on the go right now. So hoping those will turn into good referrals and stuff like that. Basically, we want to build the company up and, you know, keep supporting a lot of other local businesses that we're partnering with, like Chef & Co., which is a great little company. They do aprons and chef gear. And you'll probably see them outfitting a lot of great chefs in the city. Mm-hmm. So we're really just working on kind of building the network and partnerships right now. We're also doing the pop-ups and the private dining kind of to keep us relevant with what's happening with food. Also for creativity. So we have that outlet to
cook. Yeah, because you're not working in a kitchen currently at the moment, right?
No. Yeah, so we're just doing this full-time now.
Do you miss being in a kitchen?
There's a little bit of it that I do miss, for sure, like the camaraderie and having that kind of comfort of your spot where you've got all your little ferments and dehydration and stuff going on. You kind of nurture them day-to-day, but it's just all in my pantry at home now. And
yeah.
It's a little tighter for space, but yeah, there is obviously a bit of that you miss, for sure, but the sacrifice of kind of letting that go is, you know, I'm meeting a lot of cool people like you guys and just developing that network. And
you mentioned that before we went on air, you mentioned that you're a father.
Yeah.
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 A one child or two?
Two. I just had a second one 2 months ago.
Oh,
yeah.
Ah, congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
The Northern family's growing.
That's right.
Yeah. I'm curious, going along this realm and taking this big risk, was that something scary for you and your wife?
For sure. But for me, you know, one thing that I've always kind of played the safe lane a little bit, you know, like I'm very calculated and analyze all the risks. And, you know, like even from opening a restaurant, like there's been many ideas. I've got a notepad, you know, like full of different concepts and ideas. And as I do the research and think about it and I really analyze it, then I just kind of, I see the risks and, you know, I kind of play the safe route, but this one just kind of felt right. There is a lot of opportunity and we're getting a lot of traction right now. And it's allowing us to still be creative and cook. And, you know, we get to network a lot more now because we're kind of out on the streets a little bit more and working with other chefs. And, you know, these pop-ups we do, we usually, you know, we invite anywhere from 8 to 10 different chefs. So we get to really work with that. And
well, we know some good bartenders. So
yeah, absolutely.
Is it vegan friendly?
Vegan. I don't know about that.
I'll just come and drink.
Actually, for the last pop-up, I had to do a vegan dish because all the other chefs were doing, you know, like pork and seafood. It's like, fuck, guys, we got to have something that's vegan. So,
yeah, dude, we're in Vancouver. You have to have something
right?
that's vegan.
Yeah.
Or at least vegetarian.
Give them a salad.
Yeah.
Give them a salad. But it's not fun. I want something that tastes like meat, Jamie.
Oh, my God.
It was a cool challenge. I did a beet and apple poke. So, I used like a lot of Hawaiian seaweeds in there and in Amono nuts and stuff like that. And it turned out pretty nice.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah.
I'd eat that.
100%. I know you would.
Let's give you a bowl of popcorn.
That is vegan. Yeah. Butterless though. Well, yeah. You can eat the vegan butter. Mm. This is vegan everything. I can't eat those
butter?
Eggs. That's so fucked up.
Yeah.
Vegan eggs. It's crazy.
How do you make vegan butter?
Cashews. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oil. Look, there's lots of nuts and grains out there.
Yeah. But nuts are so expensive, then you gotta, you know, stabilize and thicken it with like carrageenan and xanthan gum. So you're eating a lot of that shit.
I make a point not to eat xanthan gum. And I'm a huge hot sauce fan, and if it has that in it, I won't.
Well, xanthan gum's,
you're it's not a thickener.
Big, yeah.
Yeah.
Does that mean it's bad?
It hasn't been proven bad yet. It's
like not, like carcinogenic.
If it's not either an ingredient I can pronounce or something that came from the ground or wherever. That wasn't synthesized in a lab, then
it's I'll go from a bacteria. I mean, I don't know if it's bad bacteria or what? I'm not a scientist.
You know, it's funny. My mom taught me something really interesting when I was a kid, and I was, I don't know, weirdly enough that I still remember this, but I was like 8 years old and she was showing me how to grocery shop. And I remember she telling me when we walked in, she said, whenever you go grocery shopping, always stick to the outside.
True.
And she, and I was like, what do you mean? She's like, that's usually where the produce, the meats, the dairy, and all the stuff that's fresh. She says, everything in the middle is all the stuff that you should probably buy the least amount. It's weird. I still think about that to this day.
Yeah, that's 100% true.
And she's just like, when you go in the middle, that's generally the, you like only buy select items in there. And so, and when we went grocery shopping, we'd always start, she always liked starting in the meat section, which, cause she's just Saskatchewan born and loves meat. But we'd always start meat, but then we'd always buy, you know, fruits and produce and all that stuff. And then we go right to the middle. And even then, you know, if we walk down the cereal aisle, she just like slapped my hand every time I tried to grab like Fruit Loops or stuff like this. But
no, it's true. I was opened up to that. My wife was a competitive Irish dancer before she retired, and she was working with a nutritionist, and I wanted to tag along because, you know, being a chef, I wanted to see what she had to say. So we went to a grocery store, and yeah, we walked around, and she, you know, we went through all the middle aisles, and just like hearing a nutritionist talk about all the shit that's in the foods, like it's actually quite terrifying.
Oh yeah, that's what I was going to say. I was going to talk about the idea that what she further told me was that if you can't, if grandma wouldn't know what it is, like what's in the ingredients,
yeah,
then you shouldn't eat it.
Absolutely, man. 100%. The stuff that, I mean, now we're lucky we're living in an era where we have information available to us where we can find out what these fucking people are poisoning us with, right. Basically. Essentially, yeah. It's poisoning. So we're lucky, but like for 20 years, they would just do pump anything.
It's all things for profit, it, though, right?
Make off, it make, profit,
make it profit. Last longer on the shelf, right? So you don't throw it away.
Make people satisfied and sedated, but not full. Just like
use less of the real ingredient, thicken
of whatever. Add as much sugar as possible, so people get addicted to it.
Sweet, sweet, sweet.
Craziness, man.
Yeah. I saw that you guys had a pop up dinner recently in April that sold out.
Yeah, so that one was really fun. We did that one at Pacific Restaurant Supply. So they've got a great spot up top, and they've got a really beautiful test kitchen, and we had, it was
is
called
that on Main Street? No,
it's Cordova.
Oh, Cordova.
Yeah, right at the end of Clark, basically. Yeah. So it was called Chefs in the Hood. And the concept was we invited a bunch of chefs from the neighboring hoods of kind of East Van. So it was East Van, Mount Pleasant, downtown, and, you know, so on. And each chef brought a dish from their hood. And we had stations set up, and we had a bunch of wineries and breweries donating too. And it was also for charity.
Mm. How many people did you have there?
It was about 160.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's amazing. We had a DJ on a forklift that came up from the showroom. So when the guests first showed up, there was a harpist, you know, playing some chill harp. And then after everyone was kind of in, starting to hit the food and drinks, DJ on a forklift right from the showroom all the way up, just started scratching the records.
Oh,
and
nice.
Yeah, that's, it was pretty cool.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah, and then we
wine,
had
a, beer, and DJ beats.
Yeah, there was a guitarist for a little intermission as well. Yeah, we had a retail section, silent auction. It was pretty cool.
And all the money raised was towards
to the UGM for the East Hires program. So my business partner TJ, he actually volunteers at the UGM a couple Tuesdays a month, and he's
UGM is a Union Gospel Mission.
Yes, right. Yeah, right on Hastings there. And what he does is he works with, you know, some at risk youth to give them mentoring skills and stuff in the kitchen. So that money, we specifically wanted that money to go to that program because it doesn't get a lot of support. So to, you know, buy food for the program, because what TJ does is he goes and, let's say it's a sushi night, he'll go and buy a bunch of rice and fish and teach them how to make sushi, which is just super cool because the government's great, but they don't really take care of a lot of these programs and stuff like that. So volunteers and donations is kind of where it's at.
Do you ever work with him as well on those?
I haven't worked with that one. I've gone to the UGM to help with slicing and carving for Thanksgiving and Christmas dinners and stuff like that.
Yeah, when I was working with Global Group, did that every year, a few days before Christmas and after.
Yeah.
I've been there.
Is there a lot of youth that show up?
I mean, for meals, they do about 5,000 meals.
Per
like for Thanksgiving.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a turnstile. So it's busy. Yeah.
It's busy.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, VCC students come and help. We've kind of built a group of like maybe like 8 to 10 chefs that go, and we just bang it out as well.
Yeah, so my mom volunteers at our church back home in Saskatoon. She goes there, and she brought me by last time when I visited her in April. And there was, I mean, it was like a Tuesday morning, but there was like for lunch, I think there was like, this is Saskatoon, but every day she says there's like 100 people waiting in line for like this type of service.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And it's insanely necessary. Yeah. It's super important.
And they're all like regular people too. Like it's not what you expect. You're not thinking that they're like drug dealers or anything. It's like a lot of kids.
Yeah.
And we were standing there and we were waiting and super friendly and super nice and just, you know, people that just don't have a lot of extra money. And that lunch can really
community.
Make a big difference.
That's community. That's like the definition of community.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why this whole Cactus Clubification of the city is just so, I mean, so depressing.
Yeah.
Even though like we understand why it's there and how it works, it's just like, you know, we need more people doing stuff that like you're doing and like people, you know, buying local and like all that kind of stuff.
Well, it's funny too, because even back to the whole thing about just being able to sit around the table as a family or friends like in your building or whatever is so important. And I think that's starting to become a bit lost. I've been actually really fascinated on that whole concept because, you know, having two kids, picky eater, one of them, and, you know, trying to get them around the dinner table is super important to me, but it's actually been a big challenge. And, you know, as I kind of study it, it's just that concept of being able to have that skill of sitting around and communicating with people, talk about your day, you know, kind of untuned is, you know, like there's studies that show it can lead to, you know, like kids feeling like no self-worth and stuff like that and all these major issues, right? So you got to wonder how much of society problems can come from that with the busy schedules and stuff like that. Just something so simple about breaking bread around the table, right?
Work week, man, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Work-life balance is like one of the major killers and one of the major reasons for people who have mental health issues as well. And also physical issues, health issues.
Yeah. I know chefs that have been diagnosed with PTSD just from being a chef.
No
shit. Yeah. Like for real.
The chip printer won't stop. But I mean, the industry we work in is like, it's, you know, I can't unwind after a shift without a, you know, a glass of wine, maybe a couple glasses of wine and like an hour of just like detoxing.
Sure.
It's an intense work environment, man.
Not me. I can just walk in and go right to bed. Really? Well, because I bike home.
That's probably because you're already drunk, probably.
No.
No. You can't see because it's a podcast, but Jamie just winked at me.
No, I don't know. I've always been able to do that. I've always been able to just like, well, because I usually bike home, but in the past I'd walk home and listen to podcasts.
Well, that's the thing. Biking is a complete unwind.
Yeah, it just winds me up.
Yeah, you burn all that energy off, right? Yeah. All that pent up energy.
Mick uses alcohol, use your bicycle.
Yes.
Both are totally fine.
Yeah.
I bike and eat real food. You eat whatever the hell you eat.
No. I eat, dude.
We need the diversity.
You eat a veggie dog. What the hell's in a veggie dog?
Just a bunch of oil and gluten. Big fan of gluten. Love it.
There you go.
It's awesome. So I have that going for me. I'm not gluten free. So I want to talk about this new sort of phenomena of meal service delivery.
Mm. Are you pro or nay?
So I was having a conversation with a dude I work with the other day, and he was like a kid in a candy store. He's like, there's this place called Real Meals, and it's all cut up for you, and there's cooking directions. Everything is properly proportioned. Each individual package comes in a refrigerated box, and like,
this is the future. You know that, right?
Yeah, but as he was talking to me, I'm like, how much packaging waste is going into this? Like, if you comparatively walk to your grocery store, to your Chinese market with your bag with a cloth bag that you bought for reusable purposes, walk home, cook your own stuff. But like, people are getting three meals a day delivered to their fucking door.
That's
in like prepackaged little, I'm assuming, plastic containers. Like, how is that sustainable in any way, shape, or form?
Yeah, you know, and plus the carbon from delivery, right?
Absolutely.
So you're adding a bunch more cars on the road. But
I hope it's not the future, Jamie. I hope the future is like just meal in a toothpaste.
Soylent.
Well, hold on. There is some optimism here. I mean, I see what you're going with. I mean, if you look at the Skip the Dishes and companies like that, I understand why it's growing. I mean, with the advent of Uber and Lyft, it's, you know, if people can get things, the idea of if I can, you know, I'm at work all day, I don't have time to go grocery shopping, and if I can have my food delivered to me and pre-packaged and pre-portioned, I understand the allure of that. I mean, that's pretty amazing, especially if you can get it where it's affordable. But I agree with you when it comes to like the waste, you know, you're not really cultivating any type of like culture or any type of like harmony when it comes to like preparing your own food, which is something that's like, very hunter gatherer.
Cactus club at home.
So you're taking, and what happens is you're getting a lot of people who are just not going to, you know, a lot of subset of young, probably a lot of young people who are doing this or who are going to grow up not learning how to cook, which is very tragic.
Yeah.
I'm not for that. I like going to the grocery store and buying my own food and preparing, even though I work nights a lot of times, so I don't get to do it as much, but I do that during the day and stuff. But there is some silver lining because there is on the other flip side of this, there is some grocers that are starting to open up that are doing the complete opposite. Like Vancouver is about to have one opening up here. I think it's just on Broadway. I think it's called Nada, and it's basically,
See, that's a zero packaging.
Zero packaging, zero waste.
Store. Yeah. That's awesome. Completely different.
No. But I mean, what I'm saying is that there is people out there who are trying to do maybe a little bit of the opposite of that,
I agree. And the fact that it's taken right until this like year to have a zero packaging grocery store in Vancouver is beyond me. There's like two in Portland. There's like so many in LA. Like it's crazy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these prepackaged meal delivery services, from what I've read, they're all working with local farmers and they are actually farm to table ingredients, but I don't know how much of that I fucking believe.
It's, I see it on both sides, right? It's great for families that are super busy and don't have time to kind of do that. But I think it's kind of adding to that disconnect between food and family, right? It's like kind of Jetsons, right? Boom, you walk home and there's dry ice and all this food ready to go. And you know, next thing you know, it'll be drones dropping it off on your patio or something, yeah, right?
Well, that's probably already happening in the States.
For sure.
Domino's, I think, was one of the fucking Domino's. Drone pizza delivery? How lazy can we fucking be, people?
Well, that's the thing. Like when I go to
Jesus.
You can blame everything on Jeff Bezos.
I do. I will. And I will.
When you go people to the market, you know, you see what's kind of in season, what's there, you know, you're feeling it. You're getting inspired by what's there and how you want to feed your family. But, you know, going online and just picking by pictures is huge disconnect. So one thing that I made a point to myself to show my kids is just because you go to the grocery store and you see all these packaged things like chicken and meat, like there's no relation that was an animal that did give up its life for us to eat, right? And like that's just part of the food chain for some, not all.
No, I understand.
But I want to make that very clear that, you know, you have to kind of have that connection and respect, because I think that's a big problem when you don't, right? You're just, oh, I can eat the steak every day, not knowing how that's kind of affecting the environment as a whole.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, one of my, like Gordon Ramsay has always been my favorite chef, and he actually had a series where he did that, where he brought his kids around to farms and they raised their own chickens, they raised their own pigs, and he wanted them to, exactly what you're saying, he wanted them to have kind of a sense of where their food came from, you know, why they eat it, you know, and have a respect for, you know, the animals and respect for the, you know, the cultivation and have more of a harmony mm-hmm. and connection. And that's something that I think, you know, with innovation and the way the world is nowadays, people living in larger cities, we have lost that. And that's, I, you know, there's a toss up in the sense that there is a great thing that comes with living, you know, the freedom and the means and the ease of doing the things that we do, which is great. But sometimes you have to maybe take a step backwards and kind of understand, you know, there's a point and place for that, but not always. You know?
Nothing has to be instant. It's sometimes about, you know, the journey of the time and effort that you put into making a soup instead of buying it from the store, right? Yeah. That soup tastes better. And then you have a sense of, wow, like, you know.
Hey, I made mushroom soup for the first time this week. That was pretty good.
There you go.
Well, first of all, mushrooms are disgusting.
I like mushrooms.
Second of all, good for you, though.
You like mushrooms?
No. I'm a fan of mushrooms.
Get out of here.
It's not any vegetable I don't like. Yeah. I'm not a fan of Brussels sprouts either, to be honest with you. Unless they're fried.
Deep fried. That's the best way to in bacon fat.
Oh my God.
Probably. I didn't know. Yeah. I often have like dreams where I'm just like eating something and I'm like, oh my God, it's meat.
Is there any meat thing that you miss? Like right now you like salivate
okay,
for?
Okay. I know this is like the basic bitch answer, but bacon.
Bacon? Why?
Everybody loves bacon.
Just because bacon. Man.
I think bacon's overrated.
I don't know. You get a lot of nasty messages after that comment. Yeah, my favorite thing was a turkey club, actually.
Oh yeah,
that's my favorite thing.
Yeah, turkey clubs.
When I was a meat eater
on the cranberry bread.
Do you think you'll ever go back?
Fuck no, not fuck cranberry bread. I thought about it. If we went to this sort of like all of a sudden went to this huge macro, disgusting, demonic food industrial complex that we live in, to like a more micro, like everyone has their own little garden and you had a chicken coop and stuff like that. I would probably think about, like, if I knew the chicken raised it and we had to slaughter it for means of like you said, food chain, I'd think about it. But right now, I don't know where meat comes
from.
You
just want to eat veggie dogs.
It's kind of exciting too. I think there's a lot of technology out there that's kind of leaning to that way, right? I think a lot of industries are recognizing that we kind of need to keep that. And I was just reading an article the other day about these special vats that you can actually grow produce in, and they recycle the carbon and the oxygen of the plants, and they're self-sustainable. So you could actually grow produce in desert or Arctic climates, right?
Yeah.
So as the population keeps growing, there's going to be things like that kind of introduced, right?
Absolutely.
Well, this has been great, Bruce.
Yeah, no, thanks, guys.
Thanks for coming and joining us, and we wish you all the best with your company.
Cheers.
Look for him and some of the work they're going to be doing. It's called Ono.
Ono. Japanese, Hawaiian.
Shaka.
You can find the website at onovancouver.com.
Yes.
Okay.
If you need us for anything.
Absolutely.
I personally would love to support those programs.
Yeah, likewise, sure. Too, if you need us for anything.
And they do sell apparel, so do check that out as well on their website.
I'm going to get a tee. Yeah. Do you do buttons? Should you do buttons?
Not yet. No
do
buttons.
Buttons, man.
People still wear buttons?
Dude, go to any show. It's all about the pins, man. Yeah. Get pins, I'm telling you.
Do you guys do hats?
Not yet.
Right. No. Hats I do. Yeah. Too. That's pretty good.
Hats are good. Yeah. Pins are good.
I'm a big hat fan for sure.
Yeah, I think
we have some aprons.
Chickpea, the new place that opened?
Yep.
They have a pin program, I guess you can call it. And one of them says like hummus life, and this is like llama, and he's like dipping a hummus. And like,
that's how amazing.
Could you not? Dude, you could just, there's so much room you could go.
Oh, we're gonna do hats.
When I think of pin, I think of like a Legion pin or something, you know, like Royal Canadian Legion.
Even like a rock and roll contest.
Yeah, absolutely.
People like to rock there.
We hope this happens to you, because so far I think we've had some good luck with the track and food bump. So,
hopefully your
company flies and you guys take off.
Yeah.
Slow burn track and food bump.
For sure. Yeah. Got it. I appreciate the support.
It's the Chris Enns bump.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Bruce, this was awesome. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
And thank you to all of you who've been listening today. This was episode 6 of the Track and Food Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening to Bruce. We hopefully have our next guest lined up here pretty quickly. And stay tuned for that. You can find us on iTunes, as always, and on Stitcher. And do check out the website that we have. It's Track and Food on Medium. And thank you so much, and have a great day. Bye.